It's that time again. Are you ready? It's America Akbar with Gadi the Jihadi, Rabbi Ariel Nachman, and Reese Cup. Are you sick of what's going on in this country? So are they. And it's time, so sit back and listen to the news, to the rants, to the guests, to everything that's going on that you need to know.
Welcome, fellow people that sometimes may or may not agree with my points of view, to another episode of what was formerly known as America Akbar, now known as America is Great, or Good, or Okay, or Mediocre, depending upon your point of view. This is Gadi the Jewish Guy, and that really is Jewish, and I really am. I'm just saying that because, you know, I don't want to offend anyone who may be Jewish, who may think that that was negative sounding or inappropriate or disparaging in any way. But without further ado, let me introduce, well, first I want to explain, my producer, co-host, or co-hostess, if you prefer, you know, we wouldn't want to get that wrong, Reese, has been through some nasty weather and doesn't have internet right now. So without further ado, let me introduce my other co-host, this individual right here.
Here I come to save the day. That means that Mighty Mouse is on the way. Yes, sir, when there is a wrong to right, Mighty Mouse will join the fight. On the sea or on the land, get the situation well in hand.
Hello, Rabbi.
Just what in the zarking farquards was that all about?
The zarking farquards. Well, after what happened, and I'm not saying that, you know, I agree or disagree with it in any way, shape, or form. I'm not taking sides here. But after what happened to Donald Sterling, I, of course, don't want my show to be taken away or be voted off by the other hosts here at Radio Jihad. So I'm just being, shall we say, cautious.
Yeah, but you don't own Radio Jihad or Blog Talk Radio, and I guess that only applies to owners, doesn't it?
Oh, well then, shit, we can say whatever the hell we want. Okay, welcome, fellow infidels, to another episode of America Akbar. This is Gadi, the Jihadi. Thank you, Rabbi, for clearing that up, because I was really worried what a boring show this was going to be if I had to be politically correct for the whole 2 hours.
Yeah, we might as well just shut down now. It'll never happen.
That's what I was thinking. Oh, my God. Anyway, everybody in the chat room, fear not. You know, if Reese gets her internet up and running, she will be in. In the meantime, you are stuck with the two Jewish guys. So not that that may, you know, we're not saying anything negative there, but, you know, shalom to everybody and all that rot. So anyway, without further ado, let me give out our phone number.
Area code 347-857-1380.
Oh, I just spit iced tea all over my keyboard. Yes, 347-857-1380. If you guys want to chat.
I'm offended by that.
Oh, I'm sorry. What?
I don't have a 347 area code. I'm offended by that.
Well, you know what? You should be. Because your area code is way up there, starting with a number 8, and that just says something. I'm not sure what it says, but it says something. That I guess if you're, what do they call a person that has the fear of high numbers? Numerophobic or something? But yeah, I don't know. You should be offended. This is going way too far. Anyway,
let's see who else we can offend.
And let's not and say we did. Who moved my microphone? I am leaning way too far over. I think my dogs were bumping on me.
There you go.
Okay. So.
Much better.
347-857-1380. And once again, I want to remind everybody that if you do call in, please push the little number one key on your dial pad. You can also do the same if you Skype in. And that way, I in the studio and the rabbi here in the studio, minus Reese, will know that you want to come on the air. Otherwise, we'll just assume that you are listening. So without offending the rabbi, 347-857-1380. Let us jump right in. Wow, this is going to be a new record. We're going to jump right into this.
It's now time for the national and international news here on America Akbar with Gadi Amin.
How'd she do that? She's not even here. How did she do that?
Man, that, I mean, she's good.
That's amazing. That was really amazing. Okay, everybody in the chat room, don't get excited. Reese is not really here. Anyway, let us start with some domestic news. And this is, I don't know if you heard about this one, Rabbi, but once again, there's outrage at a public school, but you will never guess this time. And yes, we're talking in the United States. This is our domestic news. Outrage in a public school. Because, are you ready for this? Are you sitting down?
Of course. Yes, I am.
Okay, because we don't want to offend anyone. Bear, get away from the door. Thank you. Because the outrage was due to the fact, not that the Pledge of Allegiance was recited, but it was recited in Arabic.
Yes,
okay.
I did see that.
Yes, as if our public schools don't have enough on their plate, Principal Tom Lopez at the Rocky Mountain High School in Fort Collins, Colorado, yes, I want to say that again for those that want to contact him, Principal Tom Lopez at Rocky Mountain High School in Fort Collins, Colorado, has decided that they need to force our students to pledge in Arabic. Why? Who knows? Some weird attempt at empathizing or sympathizing with the Islamic world? Well, here's what the school stated. The school recites the Pledge of Allegiance weekly on Mondays. All right, I got to stop right there. I realize this is not a rant, but what happened to when we used to do it on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday? Wasn't this
every
like a daily
day? First
every
thing.
Morning? All right, back to the story. The school recites the Pledge of Allegiance on weekly on Mondays. Last Monday, a member of the Cultural Arms Club led the student body in an Arabic version of the pledge. But, oh, yes, let me explain. For those that aren't familiar with the Pledge of Allegiance of the United States of America, there's this section that says, under God. Well, guess what? They replaced those words with under Allah. Okay, let me say that again. Yes, the students were led in an Arabic version of the pledge where the words under God were replaced with under Allah. Principal Tom Lopez denies any attempt to push an Islamic agenda, saying, and I quote, "These students love this country. They weren't being un-American in trying to do this. They believed they were accentuating the meaning of the words as spoken regularly in English." Principal Lopez.
So wait a minute. So there was an outrage, and he's shifting the blame to the students, even though this was his idea.
Yes, it gets better.
Oh, okay.
Principal Lopez doesn't make any sense. Speaking unintelligible words in Arabic in some way accentuates their meaning? This is an extremely weak argument in defense of an ill-advised decision. He said the cultural club seeks to, quote, destroy the barriers and embrace the cultures that exist within the high school. That would translate into destroy the barriers to Islam and embrace it, right, Mr. Lopez? The Podori, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, I will spell it, P-O-U-D-R-E, Podori, School District Communications Director Daniel Clark said, they understand why parents are upset. She told Fox News, quote, We understand not everybody would agree with the student's choice. We've heard there are those who are upset. So wait a minute. I got to interject here. Let me read that again. We understand that not everybody would agree with the student's choice. I didn't hear anywhere where the students had a choice in whether or not they were going to recite it in Arabic. But let me continue reading this. Let's put into perspective for the feeble-minded Clark and Lopez. It's not the student's choice. They don't control the public address system. It was the school's choice. Her simplistic defense included a reference to one supportive email, one, counted on one finger, one supportive email, and a reference to a similar mistake last year, which drew controversy when the pledge was recited in Spanish. So somehow not learning from and expanding on your previous mistakes is perceived as a viable defense for this year. Oh my gosh.
Okay, now what was it that Einstein said? Repeating the same behaviors and expecting different results is the definition of insanity?
That would be correct, yes. An abdication of responsibility is also part of their defense. Clark attempted to pass the buck of responsibility to the students by saying this is a student-initiated and student-led club. There is no school sponsor or advisor. It doesn't come under the umbrella of the district. Well, actually, the activity of reciting the pledge does come under the district. Choosing to put it into the hands of a group that are not regulated by their administrators does not provide absolution. This entire story has a deeper root issue running through the entire thread. What is really at the root of this little controversy is another episode of liberal, quote, white guilt, where liberals are constantly seeing racism, persecution, hatred, and evil where it doesn't actually exist. The media, driven by liberal emotionalism, is constantly searching for evidence of the American hatred of Islam, and it's just not there. No, it's not there. It's not in the Pledge of Allegiance. It's right here on my show. The media hand-wringing over violence against Muslims after every terrorist attack against us, when in reality, any backlash is usually an isolated incident that has another issue at play. There have never been any waves of violence or anger against Muslims in America, even after 9/11. Americans were able to keep their cool, and there was no rash of violence against American Muslims. Why liberals are constantly worried about our response to Islam's assault on our nation and our values, they miss the truly important thing. We are constantly under attack by Islam. They're worried about offending the world's Muslim population when they should be worried about helping us defend Western values and ideals. Here's a helpful little hint for the spineless liberals who are constantly worried about what everybody else thinks of us. Wake up! While you are whining about our feelings, our enemies are killing children, persecuting Christians and Jews, and dreaming of ways to make us suffer. That is a fantastic story. I honestly don't remember what website I got that off of, but I love their little rants.
I'll tell you what, my question to Ms. Lopez?
No, Mr.
Mr. Lopez.
It's Mr.
Okay,
Lopez and Ms. Clark.
Okay, Ms. Clark and Mr. Lopez. When was the last time that the Pledge of Allegiance was done in Polish? When was the last time it was done in Hungarian?
Or Hebrew?
When was the last time it was done in Yiddish? When
or
was
Russian?
The last time it was done in Swahili?
Or Zimbabwe? Whatever they speak over there. Zimbabwean. I mean, really, Zulu? What? The click language?
Bloody click.
Oh, my God. Well, you make a very good point, Rabbi, and I'm going to expand on that point. If they want to be cultural,
please do.
Yes, if they want to be culturally correct, they're going to need to do the Pledge of Allegiance a lot more than once a week to get all the freaking languages in. Just saying. This Monday shit's got to stop. Anyway, everybody, welcome back to the Real America Akbar, where we don't give a damn about political correctness and whatever we say goes. So the number is 347-857-1380, and we're just going to ignore the whole Donald Sterling thing and not worry about getting ripped off the air. Now, I did receive an email from a friend, hat tip to that friend, linking me to the Patriot Action Network website for a story that was titled, I got very excited when I read the title, then I got angry, The Ground Zero Mosque is Nixed. Score a big win for the good guys. The New York Times has a big write-up on the latest developments of latest developments on the now-scrapped Ground Zero Mosque. All of you who fought that 15-story mosque-astrocity with us, kudos to you. We fought back, and we won. Well, no, that's not really what happened. And it kind of ticks me off that a site such as the Patriot Action Network could be oh so wrong, oh so far from the truth. And if you want to call this a win, let me read for you what they're referring to in their own statement about the New York Times big write-up. The developer, whose proposal to build a Muslim community center and mosque near the World Trade Center failed amid national controversy 3 years ago, said Tuesday that he now plans to construct a museum devoted to Islam in the same location. Let me stop right there. Okay, so the 15-story mosque, Muslim/community center, Park 51, Constadoria, whatever the hell, Constabola, all the different names that they had for it, has been nixed. It's going to be a museum and Islamic prayer center instead. That's not a win. Sharif El Gamal, the developer, said through a spokesman that instead of a $100 million 15-story community center and prayer space, he is now planning a smaller 3-story museum, quote, dedicated to exploring the faith of Islam and its arts and culture, end quote. The building would also include a sanctuary for prayer services and community programs. Wait a minute.
What would you call that? A prayer center. What would you call that?
A mosque.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I got that right. Okay.
It's a freaking mosque at Ground Zero. Isn't this what we were fighting against, people? We didn't win shit. The only thing that we want is instead of it being 15 stories tall, it's going to be 3 stories tall. I don't care if it's in a freaking basement of a building that's no stories tall. You don't put a mosque at Ground Zero. I don't need
to explain
the conquering into this. I've done it enough on this show. Go ahead, Rabbi.
So basically, what you're saying is that you can cover it with chocolate icing and you can put sprinkles on it, but a turd is still a turd.
Yeah, only it's a turd with chocolate icing and sprinkles.
And a smaller one.
To make the plan more attractive to neighbors, he said in a statement, he even commissioned a French architect, Jean Neuville, winner of the 2008 Pritzker Prize, to design the building at 4551 Park Place, which is only 2 blocks from the former World Trade Center in Lower Manhattan. Quote, this is a more tailored approach, both physically and pragmatically, said Hank Scheinkampf, a spokesman for El Gamal. What a sucker. Hank Scheinkampf is the spokesman for El Gamal. Heil. Anyway, quote, it will prove to be an important addition to the neighborhood and to New York City's arts and cultural community, end quote. The museum will be a 5,000-square-foot, 3-story structure, said Scheinkampf, adding that the dimensions and design are still in development. He said Mr. El Gamal's signing of Mr. Neuville shows his serious commitment to realizing this project. Mr. Scheinkampf said that Mr. El-Gamal is not anticipating an outcry like the one he faced back in 2010 when the center was loudly opposed, get this, quote, by right-wing anti-Muslim organizations. How about instead of right-wing or left-wing, we just call it American anti-Muslim organizations, as well as some relatives. I love this. Here's the actual wording. This pisses me off. The center was loudly opposed by right-wing anti-Muslim organizations, some relatives of September 11th victims, and others who contended it would be insensitive to build an Islamic institution so close to ground zero. Gee, let's read this again. We had anti-Muslim organizations, some of the relatives of victims of 9/11, and others who said that it might be insensitive to build an Islamic institution so close to ground zero. So basically, you just had to throw in the wording right-wing anti-Muslim organizations, because that's all we are. Has nothing to do with the fact that we use common sense. Anyway, but he may be naive about the depth of the opposition. Robert Spencer, one of the loudest voices against the 2010 proposal and who runs a, quote, anti-Muslim blog, Jihad Watch, said this plan would be no better. No shit. Quote, the structure, as you describe it, he wrote in an email, would be as grotesque as a three-story museum dedicated to exploring the faith of Shintoism and the emperor worship and its arts and culture, with a sanctuary for prayer services and community programs at Pearl Harbor. End quote. Left unclear by Mr. El-Gamal's announcement was how realistic his plans are. When asked about financing, he said only that Mr. Gamal would initially finance the museum and sanctuary himself and hoped to find other benefactors. Mr. El-Gamal had the trouble raising money in the past. In 2011, he was sued by Consolidated Edison, which owns part of the site, for $1.7 million in back rent. He disputed the formulas used to calculate this figure and filed a lawsuit. Let me tell you how that figure was calculated. You take the monthly rent amount, and you multiply that monthly rent amount by the amount of months you have gone without paying your rent. That's how you get to $1.7 million, you putz. There was no timetable given for the museum. This month, however, Mr. El-Gamal filed plans with the buildings department to demolish the five-story 45 Park Place and four-story 51 Park Place to make way for the project. They said the demolition would begin in the coming months. The nonprofit organization, now known as Park 51, holds daily Islamic prayer services and cultural events at the site and said that that would temporarily be relocated in the neighborhood and the prayer services would resume in the new building. Daisy Khan, who along with her husband, yes, we know the name well, Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf, was originally a partner with El-Gamal in the Park 51 Community Center project, said that they were not contacted or involved with the latest plans. I'm just as surprised as anyone else, Ms. Khan said. It is definitely a scaled-down version, a minuscule version of the last project. It didn't seem that El-Gamal had reached out widely to the city's Muslim community before this announcement. Amina Mir, who worked on advertising and social media for the original project, said she had received an invitation to hear about El-Gamal's new agenda just this week. Linda Sarsour, executive director of the Arab American Association of New York, said that El-Gamal called Tuesday morning to invite her to meet with a few community leaders to talk about the project this week. Mr. El-Gamal declined to be interviewed for this article. While the museum is in its early development, it will display art exhibitions and host academic and cultural events. Mr. Scheinkopf said the developer had met with elected officials, local community members, and academics about his plan, but he declined to provide names. Mr. El-Gamal is also recruiting academics and members of the community to provide the museum's direction and initial programming. A budget is in the process of development, he said. Yeah, so once again, people, that's not a win, okay? A win would be they're no longer there. They're no longer using that space to pray in. They no longer have no plans to build any mosque, Islamic center, prayer center, or whatever you want to call it, anywhere near 9/11, 9/11 site. That would be a win.
Now, just for those people that don't understand this, Gotti, will you explain why it is so important for the Muslims to build a mosque in that location?
Well, it's rather simple, actually. First of all, let's start with just the word Islam. The word Islam means submission or submit. One submits to Islam. They don't necessarily just, you know, go out there and say, oh, I'd like to be Islamic. No, it's a submission. Throughout history, since Muhammad, their so-called prophet, since you go all the way back to Mecca and Medina, where it started back in the 600s, what happens is every time they conquer an area, they will raise up the synagogue, the church, the temple, whatever is in that area, and they will build in its place a mosque. Perfect point of example is Al-Aqsa Mosque on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. How did a mosque end up on the Temple Mount where the Jewish temple, both the first and the second one, stood? Oh, that's simple. Islam. What is the name of that one that I keep trying to remember in Spain? Is it Constantinople? No. Concordia.
Yeah, Concordia.
The Concordia. You know, everywhere, which is still a battle cry for Muslims throughout the world. Everywhere they go in and they take over an area by force, they build a mosque in whatever prayer center was in that area. If they were in a Buddhist area, it's going to be at a Buddhist temple. If they were in a Jewish area, it'll be a synagogue. If it was a Christian area, it will be a church. This is
conquest. Because the church or the synagogue was like the center of the community. And by building the mosque at the ground zero location, they're basically, because it was the World Trade Center, and it was the Cordoba Mosque, they're basically saying that they have conquered the world.
Right. Right, which is exactly what their whole plan is anyway, not to make Islam equal to other faiths, but dominant, plain and simple. I don't want to spend a lot of time on it. We've beaten that horse almost to death, and I don't mind kicking it a few more times once it's down, but if you've listened to this show on any sort of a somewhat regular basis, or if you've read any of my articles, then you have got to know and understand. Go to GaddiEdelman.com, 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 and just read some of my articles. Read the article about the 9/11 mosque. Read the article about Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf. I did a whole bunch of stuff on both of those. So you can go there and understand how every time throughout history, that's what they do. I mean, that is what they do. They go in and they raise up whatever sanctuary is there, and then they replace it with a mosque. That is their way that is the way of showing that they have conquered an area.
Exactly.
And
we've seen it. We've seen it numerous places in Israel. Not just the Temple Mount where the Al-Aqsa Mosque is, but at the Tomb of the Patriarchs.
Right. Right. And I was looking real quick because I wanted to find it. Let me see if I can find it real quick.
And thanks for Ketfern, who identified it as the Cordoba Mosque.
Yes, I appreciate that because I couldn't remember the name of it to save my life because I've got too many names in my brain, too much stuff rolling around up there. I am looking for a lecture that I did where it explained, oh boy, terror financing. I did a lecture the night that Faisal Abdul-Rauf was on his little tour across the United States. He was doing a lecture at UNC Chapel Hill in North Carolina. Reese came to this with me. And I was among three speakers that night, and we did a counter lecture and a candlelight vigil while he was raising money for his so-called bridges and mosque. By the way, whenever you hear the Muslims use the term bridges, understand that even in their own words, this is not my opinion, this is not making a play on the words. In Arabic, amongst themselves, when they refer to using the term bridging, like bridging Judaism and Islam, bridging Christianity and Islam, in their own words, they have explained in Arabic that the term bridge is that the bridge only goes in one direction.
Mm-hmm.
That's real important to remember and understand. So, of course, right now I'm not going to be able to find that. I'm looking on my desktop and I'm looking for the
Well, considering we're at 8:30, maybe we could take our 8:30 break and maybe you could find it.
You know, I was thinking the same thing, but I doubt I'll find it. But we can still take a break. let me see if I can do as well as Reese. Not. Okay, so our first break, if I can find it down here, because she did have it set up, luckily, before she lost internet. Here it is. The first break is going to be What Difference Does It Make by Nate Smoove. And I'm not sure, like Reese is, of all their different websites, but I'm assuming that Nate Smoove, if you can't find him at natesmoove.com, then I would just Google Nate, S-M-O-O-V-E, Smoove, not smooth, Smoove, S-M-O-O-V-E. So this is Nate Smoove, What Difference Does It Make? And we will be back after this.
September 11th, 2001. On this day, the world did mourn for the men, for the women, and the children who would no longer return home. Some said their goodbyes, some had no time. Pray for those lost. Pray for those left behind. We sought justice for those innocent lives taken away. Every year we celebrate the lives that were. We pay our respects for all, this day and more.
What difference does it make? 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 Straight line to America's face. What difference does it make? 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 Should have been your life at stake.
September 11th, 2012. Five brave men stood alone to the enemy we were told that was gone. Benghazi is safe, is what they said. No calls for help were ever made. As he played cards or slept for his next campaign, this could be bad for his name. The only answer was, stand down. Four lives were taken away. A video the cowards claimed. To the families they stood and said, we will find who did this and justice will be made.
What difference does it make? 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 Straight line to America's face. What difference does it make? 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 Should have been your life at stake.
Extortion 11.
What difference does it make? This is the response she screamed. As true Americans, well, we do not agree. What difference does it make? Our leader has failed. promoted those who would swear not to tell. This is not the America our soldiers fought so hard for, and it's turned into a living hell.
What difference does it make? 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 Straight line to America's face. What difference does it make? 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 Should have been your life at stake.
What difference does it make? It matters when we try not, because we know we will succeed to accomplish and save. We try because we are the land of the free, made of the brave. Sleep in peace, strong, noble compatriots. As thou with the Lord's loving grace pick up your fallen shield and battle for the truth for which they will not reveal.
What difference does it make? 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 Straight line to America's face. What difference does it make? 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 Should have been your life at stake.
What difference does it make? Dear Lord, shine your loving grace down upon your chosen nation. Help my deeds stand tall in the hall of my fellow patriots. Let the America of today know that she is still the America of lore. God bless her fall. God bless the USA.
What difference does it make? 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 Straight line to America's face. What difference does it make? 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 Should have been your life at stake.
Welcome, fellow infidels. Gotti Edelman here with America Akbar Radio. If you're only listening to the radio show, you are only getting a small piece of what we do around here. You need to get over to GaddiEdelman.com, GaddiEdelman.com. There you can read my weekly articles that come out every Monday. You can check out my videos, and you can link up to a bunch of other great sites and really stay on top of things. So once again, for everybody here at America Akbar, keep on listening, and thanks for your support.
Hey everybody, this is Dave Bray of Madison Rising, and you're listening to America Akbar with Gotti Edelman and Reek on Blog Talk Radio.
Would be untrue. You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you, girl, we couldn't get much higher. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on fire.
The times you hesitate. We are back. Thanks, everybody, for hanging on through the break. Welcome back to America Akbar. What was, at some point during the beginning of the show, in case you missed it, formerly known as America is Great or Good or Okay or Mediocre, depending upon your point of view. Anyway, so I'm not going to bother to go back and explain that one. Hey, Rabbi.
I just have to listen to it on the podcast.
I guess, yeah. They're just going to have to. So listen, what I did, I didn't have time to find that speech. It was a very short speech, but it gave throughout history all the famous places that Muslims have conquered and then built mosques. And the reason I couldn't find it is it's not on my desktop. I took a lot of my speeches, because there were so many of them, and I stuck them on flash drives. And I've got 4 or 5 different flash drives here, so it would take some time for me to find it. But given the fact that this is a live program and I didn't know you were going to ask me to explain it, I didn't have it ready. So be that
surprise.
As it may. Surprise, that's where we are. Anyway, so let's see if we can get back to the news, because we didn't really get through called. I was hoping to take our first break at the break between the domestic and international news, but I've got one more piece of domestic news. And if we have time, I may rant about this later. This is the shortest one I could find about Benghazi. Now, unless you seriously have been living under a rock, you've had to have heard by now that another email came out about Benghazi. So, let me just read this very short, it's like three paragraphs. Americans believe there is some kind of cover-up on Benghazi. That's the title. Steve Hayes, senior writer for the Weekly Standard, told viewers on Wednesday's special report with Brett Baer that the American public is fascinated by the Obama administration's handling of the aftermath of attacks in Benghazi that killed four Americans. Quote, they do believe that there was some kind of cover-up. I think they have reason to believe it, Hayes said. His comments came after a White House briefing on Wednesday afternoon where Press Secretary Jay Carney claimed a recently released email from a senior presidential advisor, Ben Rhodes, did not focus specifically on preparing Susan Rice to talk about Benghazi on Sunday talk shows following the attack. Carney claimed the email was about, quote, the overall situation in the region, and said the administration was working off the best information it had at the time. Hayes disputed that, noting, quote, honestly, nobody in the world believes that the administration provided the best information available at that time. The question, if you're a defender of the administration, the question is, why didn't you have the good information? But if you are someone that believes that this administration was covering it up, then the question sort of answers itself, end quote. That's the shortest piece I could find, and I think that pretty well sums it up. But if you've missed it, Rabbi, did you happen to see Representative Trey Gowdy's remarks on this email?
No, not Trey Gowdy's. I heard some of the other senators' remarks today on it.
Well, I'll tell you what. I was bitching and screaming and complaining. I was talking to somebody, and I was saying everyone, whether it's ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, and I'm glad they finally decided to pick up on it, but everyone is missing the entire point because it's not whether or not it was a video that started this whole thing. It's not whether or not it was a video. That is irrelevant. It's not whether or not they told Susan Rice to tell everybody it was a video. That's irrelevant. And it pissed me off. And finally, Trey Gowdy said what I said to my friend when I was bitching about it, and I saw it later that night. He made a statement, and I'm going to paraphrase here and probably use my own words, which I did when I was bitching about it. Why is it that 20 months, almost 2 years after Benghazi's attack, after Congress subpoenaed these emails, that the email came out through a private organization who got it through the Freedom of Information Act, yet Congress has still yet to receive it?
I did hear that comment.
This is the issue. They are lying. And if they're not releasing the emails for 20 months after a subpoena, forget how much time has gone by. If they're not releasing emails that were subpoenaed, they are covering something up, plain and simple. We said on this very show, and people said I was crazy, that it was a kidnapping gone bad. I've had more than one guest on talking about the fact that Benghazi was nothing more than a kidnapping gone bad, that it started because of the gun running. We had Claire Lopez on here, former CIA operative of 20-plus years, explaining about the gun running and the Benghazi connection to that gun running. The compound itself, the very house that our ambassador was killed in, and the reason our ambassador was there to begin with before he was an ambassador is because he was the liaison between the Libyan rebel army trying to overthrow Gaddafi and the American government when we were providing them with weapons. Oh, I'm sorry. I need a breath.
Yeah, I got to tell you, Gowdy. Every time Gowdy says something, I listen. You know, because he's only one that seems to have any common sense.
I listen. I like that. Yeah, he really does. All right, let me get to some international news. And depending on how long it takes, we may actually be able to get in a full Theory Y tonight, which I'd like to do. And that is if we can get, you know, I would love to get Cliven Bundy on the phone, but I think that he's entertaining Donald Sterling tonight. So, just, and I, if I'm not mistaken, they're having a little bit of a dinner get-together, and what is her name? Paula Deen was invited, too, from what I remember. But anyway, yeah, I just kind of had to throw that out there.
Ow.
Yeah, and I'm curious. I'm just out of my own curiosity. Do you think Cliven Bundy has any black cows, or all his cows are albino? Anyway, so international news. This is actually breaking news. I've got to stop laughing about my own jokes because this is serious. Breaking news out of Israel. A young woman's body was found and terrorism is suspected. Shelly Dadon, a woman only age 20 from Afula, Israel, was found dead just today in an abandoned parking lot near the industrial area at Migdal Hamek in Galil. The woman had stab wounds all over her upper body and was pronounced dead by paramedics at the scene. A police source said that investigators are looking into a possible terrorist motive for what is being treated as murder, but the police's, quote, prime suspicion, end quote, is that the murder was carried out by terrorists.
Yeah,
Dadon had no criminal record. She was on her way to a job interview but never made contact with her family for several hours. When they found out that she didn't show up for the interview, they then contacted police. Her body was found a short time later by patrolmen in a lot that the police say is out of the way and rarely visited by people. This is unfortunate. The parents were then brought to the parking lot to identify their daughter. God. A senior source in the police central unit told the news station that the murder was carried out in a grove very close to the road that connects Migdal Hamek, and that might be Migdal Ha'emek. You know what? It's Migdal Ha'emek. I hate trying to read Hebrew and transliterated English. A road that connects Migdal Ha'emek with Nazareth and nearby Arab villages. And I'm quoting here, for someone who knows the area well, it would be easy to carry out such a deed and disappear. That is according to the commander of the Israeli police, Northern District Major General Zohar Dvir. We are at the start of an investigation, and when we complete the situation assessment, we will provide more information. That's all we have right now. I don't know, Rabbi, if you saw this story in any of the Israeli papers before we came on the air. It was just breaking as we came on. I urge everyone to go to either the Jerusalem Post, Israel National News, or ynetnews.com. Arut Sheva is Israel National News. You can get to it either way, arutsheva.com or israelnationalnews.com. Just look at the photograph of this young lady. I want everybody to see what these bastards do. Look at the photo of this beautiful 20-year-old young lady. I mean, it's one thing to be a wasted life. It's another thing. And one of the articles, and I couldn't bring myself to read it on the air, I believe it was the Jerusalem Post that quoted her mother after her parents, her mom and dad, had to identify her at the scene. And this is the people that we're supposed to be trying to make peace with. And I'm just sick and tired of seeing any life, but especially a young, beautiful, beginning their life on the way to a job interview, being cut off for nothing more than to make a statement by these animals that live in a nearby Arab village and stab her to death and drag her into an abandoned parking lot so that they can go back and do their little dance and throw out candy and say, Allahu Akbar. It kills me. It really does. Anyway, get my composure here. Did you hear about the United Kingdom's political leader that was arrested for hate speech?
Yes, I did. And what hate speech it was.
Oh, my God, it was so horrible. Rabbi, he quoted Winston Churchill.
Of all people.
Yes, a 2009 poll found that more than a third of British teenagers couldn't identify Winston Churchill's most famous words. Well, it turns out that that deficit might just save them from jail. Because in a shocking application of hate speech law, Paul Weston, co-founder and leader of the Liberty Great Britain Party and a candidate for the member of the European Parliament, was arrested this past Saturday and now faces a possible 2-year prison sentence. And his crime? He quoted one of the 20th century's most famous Englishmen, the World War II hero, Churchill. Here's what Liberty Great Britain reported on its website. Mr. Weston, a candidate in the May 22nd European elections in the Southeast, was arrested on April 26th in front of Winchester Guildhall for quoting in public a passage critical of Islam written by Winston Churchill while using a megaphone. He spent several hours in a cell at the Winchester police station, after which the original charge of breaching a Section 27 dispersal notice was dropped, but he was then rearrested for racially aggravated crimes under Section 4 of the Public Order Act, which carries a potential prison sentence of 2 years. He was fingerprinted and even obliged to submit to DNA sampling, following which he was bailed with a return date. Yes, the case is now being presented to the Crown Prosecution Service. If the CPS, Crown Prosecution Service, decides to prosecute, then he will be arrested, awaiting trial when he presents himself to the police on May 24th. The offending words were taken from Churchill's book, The River War, which was penned in 1899 while he served as a British Army officer in Sudan. It is a passage quoted on the internet. How dreadful, and I'm quoting here, how dreadful are the curses which Mohammedism lays on its votaries. Besides the fanatical frenzy, which is as dangerous in a man as hydrophobia in a dog, there is this fearful, fatalistic apathy. The effects are apparent in many countries. Improvident habitants, slovenly systems of agriculture, sluggish methods of commerce, and insecurity of property exist wherever the followers of the prophet rule or live. A degraded sensualism deprives this life of its grace and refinement, the next of its dignity and sanctity. The fact that in Mohammedan law, every woman must belong to some man as his absolute property, either as a child, a wife, or a concubine, must delay the final extinction of slavery until the faith of Islam has ceased to be a great power among men. Thousands become the brave and loyal soldiers of the faith. All know how to die, but the influence of the religion paralyzes the social development of those who follow it. No stronger retrograde force exists in the world. Far from being moribund, Mohammedism is militant and a proselytizing faith. Yet publicly voicing such sentiments in Britain is now often viewed as racially or religious harassment. What this means is that were Churchill alive today, conceivably he would be arrested by the United Kingdom's government simply for espousing his beliefs. Gee, does that sound familiar? Who else just espoused their beliefs privately in a conversation and, although not arrested, is bound to lose his entire income and well-being? That would be, what is that guy's name again? The NBA owner? Yeah.
Oh, we kind of mentioned something about him earlier.
Yeah, we did, didn't we? Some may assume Churchill's fame would save him, but it was no shield for Paul Weston, nor has it helped the talk show host Michael Savage, a most well-known American victim of British hate speech law. Back in 2009, Dr. Savage was placed on a list of people who are banned from entering the UK, along with hardened criminals and terrorists. The British government extended this ban in 2011, saying that the commentator had not provided any acceptable evidence to show his repudiation of those unacceptable behaviors. Note, the behaviors are amounting to simply voicing an opinion. I don't need to read the rest of this, But let us just say this is where we are headed in the U.S. Every time we see something going on in the United Kingdom, I say, look out, people. It's going to happen here. And now we're seeing it. We're seeing it that your words are going to get you arrested. Your words are going to get you banned from things. Your words could make you lose your entire livelihood or any business you own. God forbid or Allah forbid, you say something that anyone in any way, shape, or form finds to be, oh, I don't know, wrong in their opinion. This is where we are headed in the United States, folks. Mark my words. You've got a guy still sitting in jail, if I'm not mistaken, who made a video that was blamed for Cairo and Benghazi, the Benghazi attack specifically. He's still sitting in jail for that. But all these people in our administration who are lying about it and covering it up, they're walking free. What did he do that was so wrong? I mean, granted, if you could jail somebody for a really bad movie, okay, I saw the movie. It sucked. But you don't put people in jail for their opinions.
At least we didn't used to.
Where are we going with this? It has gotten to the point.
It's a slippery slope. Because once you start, where do you stop?
It's not even a slippery slope anymore. It's a freaking 90-degree downhill water slide at this point.
It's a one-horse sleigh ride to hell.
All right. Well, I've got to get some iced tea. And I see that we've got a bunch of people in the chat room. I hope you guys are all being nice to each other because no one is really monitoring what's going on in there. But we're going to take our second break, 9 o'clock hour. When we come back, I want to do a rant, a little bit of, oh, I don't know. Well, you know what? We'll consider this a teaser. And you'll just have to wait to hear what the Gotti rant is about tonight. But we are going to take a quick break. Our second break up tonight is going to be Toots Sweet, Stand With Israel. Oh, how apropos, because this will come right on the heels of the Gotti rant. My rant will come right on the heels of this song. So without further ado, Toots Sweet, Stand With Israel. I'm assuming you can find Toots Sweet at tootsweet.com. If I am wrong, just go and Google TOOTSSWEET, Toots Sweet. And this is Toots Sweet, Stand With Israel.
As the world turns around, history of peace itself again. As the world turns around, we find ourselves in the same damn predicament again.
Stand with Israel, we stand with Israel. Stand with Israel,
America and Israel.
The devil's got himself a new disguise, wearing the mask of democracy right before our eyes.
Business out in today, a race fueling the flame.
The face of evil flies no flag while waging this unholy war.
Islam and the socialists side by side,
like the Nazis and Iranians in 1935.
Social justice or caliphate?
Can socialism coincide with genocide? You decide.
As the world turns around,
history repeats itself again.
As the world turns around,
we find ourselves in the same damn predicament again.
We stand with Israel. We stand with Israel. Stand with Israel,
side by side with Israel.
No one prepared for what they had in store,
until blood from the dead bodies washed up on the shore.
So many lives lost, remember the Holocaust.
An evil never seen before, we swore would never happen again.
Such bitter speeches the world adores,
but it's the content of
of his character that cannot be ignored.
Cornig and Hezbollah are no fake freedom for the law.
Stabilize, reorganize until it's time they settle.
As the world turns a blind eye,
history repeats itself again.
As the world turns a blind eye,
we find ourselves in the same damn predicament again.
Stand with Israel.
We stand with Israel.
Hesitating
the unrest as history's repeated
as the world turns a blind eye.
Socialists, commies, and Islamic fascists have all realigned
as the world turns a blind eye.
It's
2011, are we gonna regress back to 67?
As the world turns a blind eye.
As goes the plight of Israel, so goes the Western way of life.
As the world turns a blind eye.
Stand with Israel.
Stand with Israel.
Hey everybody, this is Dave Bray from Madison Rising. Help Madison Rising keep the banner flying high and show everyone that you are one of the millions of hardworking people in this country that are still proud to be an American. Take the challenge at www.starspangledbannerchallenge.com. That's starspangledbannerchallenge.com.
Can you see by the dawn's early light? What's so proud?
It is Thursday between 8 p.m. and 10 p.m. Eastern Time. What are you doing? Well, if you're like me, George from the American View, then you're listening to Gotti Edelman of American Art Bar. You know Gotti, short guy, clutching on top, the smart man.
Thanks, everybody, for hanging on through the break on another rockin' bumper Thursday. God, I found, you know, I feel like a real DJ when I say that, Rabbi. This is cool. We need to do more music.
Got to get your DJ voice there, you know.
DJ voice? You almost said D-joint.
Yeah.
What's a D-joint? Would that be a doobie joint? I don't know. I'm just getting thrown into the 60s here. Oh, my gosh. Anyway, speaking of rock, let's do this.
It's time for a Gotti rant.
I was snapping my fingers, can't help it. I love that music. And Reese's not here. I could play it again if I want. Okay, enough of that. All right, we got it out of our system. Anyway, it's fun not having Reese here.
Did you notice something?
No,
we hit the brakes right on time tonight.
Yeah, we did, didn't we? That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, it's easier because I have to keep my eye on the clock. So normally I let Reese bing me through Skype saying, take a break, take a break, take a break. Yeah, so it's a little bit easier when you're actually watching the clock. Anyway, here's my rant. Now, for those, once again, if you were living under some sort of rock, maybe you missed the recent word apartheid come out of John Kerry's mouth. Now, rather than, I could do this myself, but Carolyn Glick, as usual, and I've used her before in my rants, Carolyn Glick, former editor from the Jerusalem Post, author extraordinaire, wrote a wonderful piece about John Kerry's use of the term apartheid. I'm not going to read her whole article because it's too long, but I have picked the parts that I feel best express my own sentiment as well. So here we go. Anti-Semitism is not simple bigotry. It is a complex neurosis. It involves assigning malign intent to Jews where none exists on the one hand, and then rejecting reason as a basis for understanding the world and operating within it on the other hand. John Kerry's recent use of the term apartheid in reference to Israel's future was an anti-Semitic act. In remarks before the Trilateral Commission, a few days after PLO chief Mahmoud Abbas signed a unity deal with Hamas and the Islamic Jihad terror groups, Kerry said that if Israel doesn't cut a deal with the Palestinians soon, it will either cease to be a Jewish state or it will become an apartheid state. Leave aside the fact that Kerry's scenarios are based on a phony demographic data, Israel will maintain a strong and growing Jewish majority in a unitary state that includes the territory within the 1949 armistice lines and Judea and Samaria. But even if Kerry's fictional data were correct, the only apartheid state that has any chance of emerging is the Palestinian state that Kerry claims Israel's survival depends on. The Palestinians demand that the territory that would encompass their state must be ethnically cleansed of all Jewish presence before they will agree to accept sovereign responsibility for it. In other words, the future leaders of that state, from the PLO, Hamas, and the Islamic Jihad alike, are so imbued with genocidal Jew hatred that they insist that all 650,000 Jews living in Jerusalem, Judea, and Samaria must be forcibly ejected from their homes. These Jewish towns, cities, and neighborhoods must all be emptied before the Palestinians, whose cause Kerry so widely champions, will even agree to set up their apartheid state. According to the 1998 Rome Statute, apartheid is a crime of intent, not of outcome. It is the malign intent of the Palestinians across their political and ideological spectrum to found a state predicated on anti-Jewish bigotry and ethnic cleansing. In stark contrast, no potential Israeli leader or faction has any intention of basing national policies on racial subjugation in any form. By ignoring the fact that every Palestinian leader views Jews as a contaminant that must be blotted out from the territory the Palestinians seek to control before they will even accept responsibility for it, while attributing to Jews malicious intent towards the Palestinians that no Israeli Jewish politician with a chance of leading the country harbors, Kerry is adopting a full-throated and comprehensive anti-Semitic position. It is both untethered from reason and libelous of Jews. Speaking to the Daily Beast about Kerry's remarks on Sunday, State Department spokeswoman Jen Psaki was quick to use the "some of his best friends are Jewish" defense. I love that crap. Some of his best, I'm sure that some of Sterling's best friends are black too. Sorry, I threw that in there myself. In her words, that would be Jen Psaki, Secretary Kerry, like Justice Minister Tzipi Livni and previous Israeli Prime Ministers Ehud Olmert and Ehud Barak, was reiterating why there's no such thing as a one-state solution if you believe, as he does, in the principle of a Jewish state. He was talking about the kind of future Israel wants. So in order to justify his own anti-Semitism and sell it to an American Jewish community, Kerry is engaging in vulgar partisan interference in the internal politics of another country. Indeed, Kerry went so far as to hint that if Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu were forced from power and Kerry's Jewish best friends replaced him, then things would be wonderful. In his own words, quote, "If there is a change of government or a change of heart, something will happen." Yes, Kerry, you are about as right on the Israeli issue, on the Middle Eastern issue, on the so-called Palestinian issue, as you were on the Vietnam issue, you swift boat lying son of a bitch, anti-Semitic prick. There, how's that for being politically incorrect, Rabbi?
Don't candy coat it, Gotti. Just come right out and say what you mean.
Well, you're the one who informed me that we could put chocolate on top with sprinkles and it's still a turd.
That's right. That pretty much sums up Kerry, doesn't it?
I'm telling you what. When I heard him use the term apartheid, I was screaming so hard and so loud. Not only did my throat hurt, my chest hurt. This man doesn't even know the way. And again, I then posted it on Facebook because it wasn't even 12 hours later when all of a sudden Mahmoud Abbas, as so predicted, picked up the apartheid word and started throwing it around. And I wrote on Facebook, does he even know what it means?
He's the one that's getting
apartheid, not Israel.
Exactly. And you see, every time that Kerry opens his big mouth, the Palestinians jump on it as an opportunity to attack Israel, whether physically or through the press or whatever it is. I mean, remember when he made those comments before. All of a sudden, the next thing we know, people are being attacked and we're having rockets lobbed in and everything else.
Let me clarify. The comments you're referring to was not that he used the apartheid comment before. He said Israel would face a third intifada.
Exactly.
Go on. I'm sorry.
No, that's basically it. Every time he opens his mouth, or this administration opens its mouth about Israel, they give a green light to Hamas or Fatah or whoever the hell it is at this moment to start crap again.
Here's the thing. God, I was making fun of Rush Limbaugh today because he was stuttering as he was so angry he couldn't get his words out. And I just went, here. Let me stop stuttering and get my thoughts together. God, I'm so angry right now over this. John Kerry, it wasn't 12 hours, as I said, that all of a sudden Mahmoud Abbas was uttering the words apartheid, but less than 24 hours, what did they throw in? Ethnic cleansing. So now Israel is not only guilty of apartheid, because they didn't say Israel would become an apartheid state. No. Within 12 hours, they stated Israel was an apartheid state and threw in, for good measure, ethnic cleansing.
Yeah, I mean, doesn't that just amount to another blood libel against the Jews? I mean, are we stepping back to the Middle Ages again?
There I go stuttering again. I mean,
it seems like there has been so many blood libels thrown against the Jews by this administration that you would think that this was an Arab country. But then again,
regardless of what you have heard Obama or his administration say about this current administration being the best friends of any administration that Israel has ever had, I'm here to tell you folks, not only is that not true, to say the least, it is the worst since Jimmy Carter.
Oh, absolutely.
Who in my chat room?
And we don't.
I'm saying
and
my
we
chat
don't,
room. Gracie's not here. Who in the chat room is saying that John Kerry is Jewish? What the hell is this shit? Oh my God, Lurch, Jewish? Have you ever heard that? Did I
actually,
read something wrong?
Yeah, I've actually heard that his family going back was Jewish.
Well, going back, everybody listening to this show is Jewish. If you want to get really technical, how far back do you want to go? The man does not practice Judaism.
Exactly.
Any more than I practice Islam. And if anybody out there ever hears that I ever start to practice Islam, you can do me a favor and put me out of my misery. You have my permission.
Okay, I'm going to write that down.
Okay, go ahead. Write that down. I'll
put
a minute.
That down. Okay. Gotti gave me permission to take him out. Okay, got it. Okay, I will be sending this to you to have it notarized and signed.
Oh, my Gotti, you're a bad, bad man.
You're damn right I am. Oh, man. Anyway, I love that voice.
I mean, what
is this thing? Oh, you're a bad, bad man.
Oh, God, I love that. Go on, I'm sorry.
So what is going to be the next thing that is going to come out of Kerry's mouth? Every time he opens his mouth, this administration gets more blood on his hands.
Wait a minute. Vorpal Bright, I don't know how to pronounce her
just
name.
Just call him Vorp.
Vorp. Just wrote in the chat room that if I turn into a zombie, smash my head. For all of you that are Walking Dead fans, thank you very much. That was funny. I'm sorry.
That's right. Everybody makes fun of the redneck until the zombie apocalypse.
And whoever in the chat room is assuming that that bad man Gotti clip was Candy Goldman is not right. Candy's not here to defend herself, so I'll just say this.
Oh my Gotti, you're a bad, bad man.
Oh boy, oh boy. Anyway, so yes, what's going to come out of his mouth next? You let the peace talks fail. It's your fault. No, that already was stated by him.
Yep.
Right after the PLO signed a treaty with Hamas and the Islamic Jihad, he blamed Israel for the failure of the talks. What else? What else might he say? I have no idea what could possibly come out of his mouth. He's threatened Israel with a third intifada. He said that they're going to end up being an apartheid state, which basically means that in world opinion, that's just going to be thrown out there. He managed to cause that. He's brought up without directly, but because of his apartheid comment, the ethnic cleansing criminal charges now. I have no idea where he could go. How can he top it? I can't answer that question, Rabbi. I don't know what Lurch is going to do to top it.
It's just, I reject reality and substitute my own fantasy or the fantasy of this administration.
Oh.
You got to wonder. I mean, seriously, you really got to wonder. I almost fell out of my chair that when I heard that whole statement about this administration being one of the best friends that Israel had. I mean, you probably have just as many contacts in Israeli military intelligence as I do, and we know probably a lot more than most people know about what this administration has done to Israel.
Unfortunately. And the last piece of international news, as if that wasn't enough to go beyond my rant, Iran is angry over the State Department's terrorism report. Oh, boo-hoo. Let me put on some background music for this. I gotta play this while I read this story. Let me just get this started here. There you go. Can you hear that?
I can hear it.
Okay, so let me turn it down one notch, and we'll use that as background music. As I read this article, Iran today rejected an annual United States report that is keeping Tehran on a list of state sponsors of terrorism as reflecting double standards. The Iranian Foreign Ministry was reacting to a State Department report which was released yesterday that kept Cuba, Iran, Syria, and Sudan on its list of state sponsors of terrorism. The report also highlighted what it said was Iran's role in supporting and funding the regime of President Bashar al-Assad in its fight against Syrian rebels. Quote, accusing Iran of supporting terrorism is politicized and based on double standards, the ministry spokeswoman Marzeh Afkam said in a statement reported by the official IRNA news agency. She questioned Washington's anti-terrorism intentions, recalling innocent people who fall victim to U.S. drone attacks in the region, as well as the turning of a blind eye to the Zionist, that would be the Israeli, crimes against the Palestinians. She also took issues with what has been the progressive removal from international terrorist lists of the People's Mujahideen of Iran, an exiled opposition group that says it seeks to overthrow Iran's Islamic regime through peaceful means. Banned in Iran, Tehran has listed as its terror group, Tehran has listed it as a terror group for carrying out bombings and assassinations. Britain took the group off its terror list in 2008, followed by the European Union in 2009, and the United States in 2012. That, Afkam said, also possesses a serious challenge to the claim of the U.S. statesman in combating terrorism. Israel was also dissatisfied with the State Department report as it focused intensely on extremist Israeli settlers and called for them to be prosecuted by the UN. We'll get back to that. The report cited 399 attacks by extremist Israeli settlers that resulted in Palestinian injuries or property damage and deemed them, quote, violent extremists, mostly over price tag attacks against Palestinian Arab homes and property. Let me explain right here what a price tag is for those that don't keep up with the Israeli news. There's a terminology in Hebrew where they refer to it as a price tag, where in the English we tag something with spray paint. You know how you have taggers that go out and do graffiti? Well, in Israel, they'll tag something with spray paint, and they say that's the price you pay for it, so it has coined the phrase being, quote, a price tag. So of these 399 attacks by extremist Israelis, most of them were graffiti. That's not a violent attack. That's not murder. That's not terrorism. Anyway.
And we already know that a great portion of those so-called price tag attacks are actually being done by the Palestinians themselves so that they can blame the Israelis.
Damn, I was going to say that.
I'm sorry.
The very next sentence.
The very next one. How about that?
How about that? An Arud Shaver.
And I'm not even looking over your shoulder.
Let me check. Wait a minute. No, you're not. An Arud Shaver report in January revealed that at least some of the recently reported cases of anti-Arab price tags were systematically being staged by Arab activists. There, it was the very next sentence. Responding today to the report, Communications Minister Gilad Erdan said the United States was in no position to grade us on our actions. No shit. Speaking during a television interview, Erdan said the State Department was unfairly equating Israel with true terror regimes. Quote, these price tags are not against lives, but against property. It's graffiti, not murder. I do not accept the position that attacks on property are the same as attacks against people. It is true that these kinds of attacks could get out of hand and lead to murder, but this has not yet happened. We in the government strongly condemn these kind of attacks, and we have been taking action against them. We are very concerned. These are immoral acts and crimes that damage Israel. End quote. So even in Israel, they are prosecuting and holding accountable those that are doing this so-called price tag vandalism. regardless of whether they be Jew or Arab perpetrators. But to lump Israel into a report of terrorist groups because of graffiti, they need to go look at L.A. or New York.
Yeah, no kidding.
Look at any train in this country, and you've got, oh, my God, it's terrorism. They spray-painted the side of that train. Give me a break. Anyway.
Yeah, here in this country, we put a frame around it and hang it on the wall.
Exactly. I think we need to turn that up a notch. Yes, Iran is upset. Because, you know, they did make the Human Rights Council in the UN. Talk about an oxymoron. And now they're still on the terrorism list as a state sponsor of terrorism. Oh, my gosh. It just makes the heart bleed, doesn't it? Oh, Lord, kumbaya, whatever, yeah. And we'll end it on that note. Perfect timing. Anyway, we're coming up on the 9:30 hour, so to keep in time with what the rabbi was saying about being actually hitting our brakes on time tonight, we are going to take our third break. I'm loving this. This is great being able to control all these different buttons, like this one. Anyway, I don't know why that was in there. I got that in there for some reason. Our third break tonight is Ann Harpin. They Changed the Rules. Now, that's actually a really good song. Not that the others weren't, but I like this song. And I believe you can find Ann Harpin over at AnnHarpin.com. And guess what? If I'm wrong, just Google Ann Harpin. That would be A-N-N-E-H-A-R-P-E-N, Ann Harpin. And this is Ann Harpin, They Changed the Rules, and we'll be back after this short break.
this is Rabbi Ariel Nachman Ben Chaim, the senior rabbi for the House of Seven Beggars Synagogue. The House of Seven Beggars is a virtual synagogue reaching out and reconnecting Jews who are distant from a Jewish community. Broadcasting a full range of entertainment and educational programming on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Shabbat, festivals, and holy days. Our complete schedule can be found at sevenbeggars.com. Won't you come and join us?
Duty bound, dusty road, headed to the sandbox, lock and load.
This country's up and it's
taken. Tired of searching for conservative music and talk shows? You can find all these and much more on Liberty Bell Radio at libertybellradio.com.
You are listening to America Offline with Guy Edelman, airing live every Thursday night, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, thanks for hanging on through the break on what is another rockin' bumper Thursday. We really got to do all music one of these nights, Rabbi, because I really could get into doing.
You got my head bobbing and my foot popping, and I love that song.
My hip is popping, and I need my walker. But yeah, if it's one thing, one good thing that the '60s brought us, it was music. Or I should say that Vietnam brought us. The one good thing out of Vietnam was the music. So, anyway.
Yeah, interesting piece of trivia.
Okay.
Jimi Hendrix.
Yes.
Jimi Hendrix served in Vietnam. He was a sergeant. I believe he was a staff sergeant and a ranger.
Really? Now, that
yes.
I did not know. That I did not know. That's pretty cool. But this poor son of a gun has been hanging on. How long have you been on hold now, sir? Yeah, you.
let me put it this way: long enough that my Social Security has just increased for my retirement benefit.
Well, that's cool. That's good. And for some reason, now all of a sudden you're like sound like you're underwater and you're breaking up. So I don't know if it's your connection the phone.
Let me see if this makes a difference.
That makes a difference. Now I can hear you.
Okay.
Because a minute ago you sounded like
I'm fixing my computer. You see,
my computer.
I just got a 500 gigabyte hard drive for this stupid thing, and I'm transferring all the files from the 250 to the 500.
Okay, I'm jealous. Wait a minute. Your old computer was 250. Mine is 4 gigabytes, and I thought I was at top of the world here. I got a
No, my friend. The 4 gigabytes is my memory. 250 gigabytes is the hard drive space that
that's disgusting.
A friend of mine, her old computer, the motherboard toasted on it, but the hard drive was still intact.
Oh, and
hers came with a 500 gigabyte. She gave me the old desktop.
Well, you can send me the 250, but for those listening to the America Akbar show, you've gotten off base there. You're a little kilter. Welcome to the Kim Komando show, all about computers. Anyway, so...
Okay, so I'm not even going to mention the number of terabytes that I have in my broadcast computer.
I don't want to know, Rabbi.
Rabbi, if you're trying to make me feel bad, you're doing a good job. Believe me, you're doing a good job. I will give you credit for that. Not that you're trying to do that intentionally.
We have a very wonderful group of guys in Chicago who actually built this specifically for our synagogue and our broadcast.
Okay,
that's good.
I just pulled it up, and then we're going to get back to the show at hand. But I just pulled up my system properties, and it says I have 582 gigabyte hard drive. So I guess I'm okay on the gigabytes of my hard drive. My memory, I think, is only 4 gigabytes, but we won't go there.
Well, then you're doing good. For home use, that's good.
With an 8-bit internal memory of his own.
Oh, my memory. I'm telling you what. or lack thereof.
Now you see, if Islam had memory like that, they would remember that we don't like them because of what they do to people like us.
Yeah, so why don't you, before we even go any farther, since I just, like, pulled you off, this individual that we're speaking with, who has yet to give his name, and I believe it's George from last week, otherwise known as Firefox.
Yes, it is. It's George
who has
from last
his own
week.
Show. George from last week, that's what he's going to be known as every week now. George from last week, he's got a show on Blog Talk. You'd think he would know that he has to push the number one button to let us in the studio know that
but
he
I
wants
did.
To come on the air. No, you didn't. If you pushed it, you pushed number two or something, or you didn't push it hard enough.
If I push the number one button on my phone any harder, I'm going to go right through the phone.
Well, now, the fact that you have a cheap phone that matches your computer is not my problem.
Oh, snap.
George, I do believe I've just been properly dissed.
Yes, you have. Would you like some aloe for the burn? Anyway, I am having way too much fun with not having my handler, Reese, here tonight.
Well, now you see, this is – it could be a good thing.
It could be. It could be
and
like
see,
the
– if Reese were here, you wouldn't be able to do half the fun stuff you're doing right now.
Like that.
Like that.
Oh, my gosh. Well, did you hear the beginning of the show?
No. Unfortunately, I was in the middle of a whole bunch of wires and – hard drive equipment, so I didn't even have the computer to log on to.
Hey, George. All right, George, you're going to have to go back and listen to the podcast and listen to the very beginning, because the show was not called America Akbar, and I'm not even going to explain it. You're just going to have to go listen to it.
I will do that.
You should.
I will do
anyway,
that.
So, before we get into our theory why tonight, I'm trying to remember, when you called in, I believe we were just starting the news. What is it you wanted to talk about?
I usually call it the snooze, but if you want to call it the news, that's fine.
Oh, on America Akbar, it is definitely the news. The way we dress it up and tell it, it's news.
Yeah,
and,
well, the mainstream media doesn't do a good job at it, so we better.
No, I can prove it. Here, listen to this.
It's now time for the national and international news here on America Akbar with Gadi Ailman.
See, we call it news.
Very cool.
That is very cool. I love all these buttons. Do you have all those buttons when you do Blog Talk?
Let me put it this way. Some of the sound bites that I have, I've got... let's just say I've got applause, I've got boos, I've got the Law and Order gavel, because sometimes I have to be the judge and jury on the show.
You don't have one of these.
Oh, my Gadi, you're a bad, bad man.
No, because I haven't got a woman willing to do that sexy a voice for me.
You don't know
it's
what
like,
it is. Get that.
Yikes.
Anyway, so what did you, when you were calling in, I'm assuming you actually did have something that you wanted to speak about other than, you know, my sound clips. So what?
with everything that we just went through, I forgot what I called for.
Oh, my gosh, no.
My brain cells went, you know something? I should install the 250 gigabyte hard drive where my brain's supposed to be sitting. It probably would do a better job.
You know, I think somewhere we actually have a sound bite for that. Wait a minute. I got to find it.
Because oh, no.
We've got – here it is. Reese's
going to kill you next week. You know that, don't you?
If she listens to the podcast. Here's the sound bite because you said you forgot.
Rabbi, do me a favor. If I go, if I you laugh uncontrollably, be sure to find a sound bite for him to use where it's a slap. This way it's like Gibbs to DiNozzo on NCIS. Whap!
No. If you start laughing uncontrollably...
Silence! I kill you!
That's what we play. Anyway, so, yeah, a lot of these clips are actually not mine. The advantage to being on Radio Jihad Network is I've got, like, 10 different shows that are on this station. I've got all their sound bites. We could actually play each sound bite and go way past our 2 hours and never repeat the same sound bite twice. But, anyway, so let's see. Let me go back and look at our notes, and maybe I can just jog your memory a little bit. We talked about the public school in Rocky Mountain High School in Fort Collins, Colorado, that forced their students to do the Pledge of Allegiance in Arabic. We talked about...
That's why I called.
There we go.
Somebody sent me a text message on my cell phone about that.
Okie dokie.
And I was like, I hope they talked about it.
Oh, yeah.
That's got me irate. That really does. No, it pissed me off. To hear that they forced the kids to say the Pledge of Allegiance in Arabic?
Oh, yes.
Are they out of their freaking minds?
In case you didn't know, the best part was that they replaced the words within the actual Pledge of Allegiance. The worst part is that they replaced the words under God with under Allah.
If I were a parent of children in that school, I'd be at their front door yanking them and saying, they're homeschooling from now on. Kiss my ass.
The problem, as much as most parents in this country, given the state of our public education, would love to do that, is both parents are working if they're lucky enough to be working. That's not going to happen, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately, you're right. That's the sad reality.
So leaving George here and leaving his mic open, Rabbi, we've got about just under 20 minutes left. Do we have time to touch on the theory Y that we haven't touched on in God knows how long?
Yeah, we should. And like we were talking about last week, you know, there is so little information that we should probably kind of tie this up and move on to something else. The thing I was wanted to hit on tonight was basically, and I've been trying to find the information on this, but the whole psychology of what happens when you give somebody power like that. And we have been seeing, you know, we're seeing it on a frightening scale, the number of abuses by local police and sheriffs and stuff like that across the country, unjustified shootings, beatings and stuff like that. And it's not just because we have the internet now, and it's not just because we're more informed. It is because it is getting worse. And Bill Whittle, on his Afterburner series, actually talked about this, about the militarization of the police, the police departments around the country, even the small police departments.
Now I wanted to interject on that, and I'm glad you brought that up. Because I do not really have an issue. Let me see how I can phrase this. I don't have a problem with police departments having SWAT teams, being dressed in military garb, or even utilizing former government vehicles such as Humvees for SWAT vehicles, and, you know, outside of having a tank. And as long as, and let me preface this, as long as they are used properly by the police departments. Because it doesn't matter whether they've got a Humvee or a tank or a helicopter or a drone. If they're misusing their police department, it's bad enough they have badges and guns. They don't need anything else. So it's a matter of the corruption or the way it's affecting them, not a matter of what they're utilizing as tools. If those tools are used correctly, I don't have a problem with it.
It's the psychology behind when you give people that kind of material and power. There's always going to be those abuses, okay? And like I said, we're seeing a rise in the abuses across the nation. And it's because of, and there's a lot of factors in it. Again, the militarization, you know, this heavy weaponry. We're seeing, you know, SWAT teams being called out for some of the stupidest things.
And I agree. You know,
and
Vorpal Byte just said in the chat room, the cops will tell you they need a 13-ton APC to serve a warrant for an unpaid school loan. That's the problem. It's the use of the tool, not the tool itself, in my book.
Right. Right. I mean, you know, if you were in Chicago, I wouldn't have an argument with them having being armed like that.
Exactly.
But then again, you know, they've created that situation on their own. But when you're talking about a small town in Minnesota having that kind of weaponry and stuff like that, it gets a little bit ridiculous. But the biggest problem that I can see with this whole thing is the blue code of silence. And the problem with that is that we know that not all police are corrupt. Not
True.
All police are power hungry and all that other stuff. However, there is that blue code of silence. And I don't care if you are a good cop or not. If you don't say something, you are as guilty as the person who perpetrated the crime.
Absolutely. Now I need to interject. Did you see what Vorp just posted in the chat room? Vorp, that was the whole point. I'm going to read her what Vorp just posted. Quote, are you people brain dead? The only reason you militarize the police is to put down rebellion. Don't you understand they plan on doing that to us? That was the whole point of our theory Y. This original theory Y, which goes back a month now, was whether or not if it came, push came to shove, where martial law was ensued, or more importantly, where our government, our federal government stated to local law enforcement, you must go into your local areas and take away people's guns, would they or would they not do it? That was the original theory Y question. It cannot be answered as a whole because from different parts of the United States, different law enforcement agencies, and then even so far trickle-down theory to different officers within those departments, some will follow that order and some won't. We see it across the board, and we've talked about it on our last theory why, where sheriffs, not sheriff's deputies, but the actual elected sheriffs in some counties have already signed a document stating that they would never go against the Second Amendment, our constitutional right to bear arms, and they would go against the federal government if they were asked to do so. They would say no. And the county sheriff has more power than the federal government. This was one of the arguments with the Clive and Bundy case. Why didn't the Clark County Sheriff come in there and say to the Bureau of Land Management, get the hell off of my county property? Go on, Rabbi. I didn't mean to interject.
No. Exactly. And, you know, getting back to our whole thing, will they turn their weapons on the American people? And I think we've come to the conclusion that it is probably going to be 50-50, 60-40. And it's all going to depend on where you're at.
Absolutely.
You know,
and
whether
what percentage
of them will turn their weapons on the people.
And how many of them, and we talked about this, Rabbi, them being the law enforcement officers, would turn their weapons on fellow law enforcement officers because they disagreed with whether or not they were going to uphold that order? You know, if it comes down as an order. I am glad to say that the county that I live in, not only has the sheriff signed that document saying no way in hell would I ever do that, but I know many of the sheriff's deputies in that same county who are all on that same boat. And he hands out his, just so people understand, because he sees it as a benefit, he hands out what we have in the state where I live, which is a concealed weapons permit or a concealed carry permit, he hands them out much easier than many other states, even easier than other sheriffs within the state that I live in, because he feels if push comes to shove with the federal government, I know that I've got a posse out there. And he's made that statement. He plans on utilizing the citizens who have weapons. So he sees it as a plus, not as a negative.
Yeah. So now we have to take that that mentality, and then we have to take the same thing, and now we got to take it to a different area. Okay. Let's go to New York or Massachusetts. Now, what are we going to see there? Are we going to see that same kind of mentality there? No, I dare say we probably aren't, because we already are seeing that they aren't going to do that. I mean, we've already seen where they have threatened the citizens with, you know, no-knock, seizure of weapons and stuff like that.
And now I want to interject again to Vorp, who just posted that no law officers refused orders at the Bundy Ranch. Vorp, that is not correct. That what is correct is that the mainstream media didn't tell us about the law officers and the BLM officers that did refuse. We didn't hear about them. That's the difference.
That's right. There were a number of them that refused to draw weapons.
Many of them who refused. So don't be so sure, because that's coming out in other avenues from people that were there, that there were law officers, even within the BLM, the Bureau of Land Management ranks themselves, that said, no, I am not going to point my weapon at citizens. And they were reprimanded, and possibly they're going to get fired from their position for it. So don't think that everybody followed those orders. This is exactly what we're talking about. You have officers who are going to put what they believe is the constitutional right of Americans first. Oh, the reports are out there. You can find them. Believe me.
If I could interject something here, guys.
Yeah, that's sure. Why I didn't meet you. Go for it.
The whole problem, as I see it, is when law enforcement is equipped in the manner that they're being equipped. And I agree. The only thing that they're out to do is to squelch what we the people are trying to do, and that's exercise our fundamental rights under the U.S. Constitution. And what happens is, and what I'm afraid is going to happen eventually down the road, is that it's going to come down to a martial law situation,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to impact all of us severely. What I'm grateful for is the area that I live in here in New York is, thankfully, the police department in my area has not accepted any of the Humvees, any of the armored vehicles. They refused. The reason they refused was because they didn't feel necessary to have them. Although the government is trying to force them to take it,
yes,
they took a stand and said, no, we're not taking these things. What do we need them for? We're not a military group. We are police officers. We are peace officers. What are we going to do?
I'm just glad that you pointed out that you're from New York, because I never would have guessed that.
Well, I try not to admit it, but sometimes it's hard.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's... Yeah, in the 1920s, when there was the, I believe it was Galveston, the Galveston hurricane and stuff, and the federal government sent troops down to Texas, and the governor of the state of Texas, along with the Texas militia, met the federal troops at the border and told them to turn around and go home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the question is do we still have governors that will still do that?
Not as many.
You know, again, as state to state, it's kind of a crapshoot. But to sum all this up, and I have faith in you know, in our military, I have faith in the majority of our police officers when push comes to shove. And we have seen this happen time after time, and in fact, we've even seen it in Russia. When push came to shove, and they were ordered to fire on the people, they turned the tanks on the government.
Yeah, but you and I both, Rabbi, being people that enjoy history, both could cite numerous occasions in the United States where troops have been called in and fired on Americans. And this has been throughout our own history.
Oh, yeah.
From
after
World War II with the sit-ins in front of Washington to the song we just played, Four Dead in Ohio.
Well, we'll go back even farther than that, because I just watched a documentary on this about the Hoovervilles.
Yes.
That was after World War One and before World War Two, during the Great Depression, when MacArthur and Eisenhower brought troops in and set the Hooverville on fire and, set weapons against their fellow soldiers.
That were promised things, gee, does that sound familiar, and never delivered. That's what I was referring to. I said World War II. It was World War One, and they set up camps in front of the White House and the Capitol, and, yeah, they burned them out. There were a lot of people. How many people died? Do you remember?
I don't recall. When you hear the number, it doesn't sound like a large number. But the shame of the whole thing is that this was military men firing on fellow military men.
Well, that, yeah, on veterans.
Yes.
So it doesn't matter if it was just one or if it was 1,000.
Well, the fact that the military, you know, and having served myself, let me just say that if I were still serving today, And an order was given to me to fire on an American citizen, I would look at that order as something, you know, not to be followed, because I'm not going to open fire on my own people.
Exactly.
However, you have to keep in mind, though, that we have seen, since this administration has been in power, we have seen a purging of the military, and we even talked to what was the sergeant's name that we had on here a couple of weeks ago, that were from Fort Hood.
Oh, Sergeant Lunsford, Alonzo Lunsford.
Lunsford, yes, Sergeant Lunsford, and we talked about this, and we talked about the purge of the upper echelon of the military, the generals and stuff, the combat hardened veterans. And I had asked him, Sergeant Lunsford, if he believed that we were seeing a purging of the military all the way down to the enlisted area, and he agreed that we are seeing a purging of the military, that we are getting rid of the old military pledge to the Constitution, uphold the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and replacing it with a military that is more like we would see in some other places, where they actually pledge their loyalty to the administration in charge.
Yeah, something in the neighborhood, just officers alone, somewhere in the neighborhood of 600 to 700 officers were cut loose,
yeah,
from the United States military, and that's disturbing. That is.
And I'll tell you what's really disturbing. As much fun as we've been having tonight, we've only got about a minute left, so we've got to call it quits. Hopefully, for our sake and her own, Reese will be back next week, and there will be no more of this.
Oh my Goddy. You're a bad, bad man.
But, you know, we enjoy that around here. You got to keep it light once in a while. I didn't hear the president tonight, though. That kind of bothers me. I've got to find somewhere around here the president. Where is here it is.
Thank you. Got it.
There you go. You're welcome. Anyway, so we will be back next week. George, I appreciate you calling in. I'm sorry that you held on for an hour and a half. next time, make sure when you push the little button, push it like 10 times. It's like one of those elevator buttons. For everybody here, we had a wonderful show. We hope to see you back again next Thursday night. We will be back to calling ourselves America Akbar, I might add. And for everybody in the chat room that joined in, for George calling in, and Rabbi, say good night, Rabbi.
Laila Tov.
Laila Tov, Rabbi, and we will see everybody same time, same channel next week. And, of course, I'm just looking for our music to go out of here. Say good night, George.
Good night, George.
Good night, George. See you later.
Fighting jihad before it was cool. Warning of terror and Sharia rules. Speaking truth to power on the radio. A lighthouse and a sword to his fellow infidels. America.